Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic comes out of my own experience. After I lost an older dog about 2 years ago, I was interested in having another dog. My family heard about the option of rescuing a dog from a rural community. We did just that and have had a wonderful and very sweet Alaska Husky Border Collie mix for about a year. She was born in Sleep Mute, and we met her at a pet supply store in Wasilla and brought her home to Anchorage. This happened through Alaska Animal Advocates. At dog parks around Anchorage, when I tell people my dog is from rural Alaska, I find other owners with rural dogs too, many from Bethel, but also Aniak and other locations. This seems like such a good idea to bring an overabundance of dogs from rural communities to population centers where people, like me, are looking for a dog and might make a good home. That prompted today's program. We've gathered some of the volunteer organizations and collaborators who do this work. I think you'll hear a passion in their voices for the work they do. I'd like to welcome our guests. Excuse me. We have Angie Lewis from Alaska Animal Advocates. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm glad to have you. We have Bev Osick from Alaskan Animal Rescue Friends, and from now on I'm going to just say ARF. Welcome,
Hi.
Bev.
How
glad
are
to
you?
Have you here. We have Jill Bingman from Everts Air Cargo, which is not an animal rescue organization, but a facilitator, really.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
So glad to have you, Jill. You're an important piece of the puzzle here, I think.
Well, thank you.
And I want our listeners to know that in the second half, we expect to hear from Sally Clampett, who is an organizer of the Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach Program, which is also part of the effort to work with dogs in rural communities. So listen for her in the second half hour. I want to let folks know that we've got some interesting links on our website at alaskapublic.org under the Hometown Alaska sort of promo there. We've got links to these organizations, and if you're interested in learning more about them or volunteering or anything like that, you can find them on alaskapublic.org. And I'd also like to invite people, if you have rescued a dog and have a story you want to tell that's meaningful, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you just have questions about how do you qualify to do this, what are the requirements to perhaps make a home for a rural dog? So you can just give us a call, and the numbers are 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right. Now, I want to sort of do a little bit of a round robin and meet you all a little bit and find out really how you got involved in this effort. So I'm going to start with you, Bev, from ARF. Did you found ARF? Or are you a volunteer for ARF? Or and how did this become something you spend a lot of time on?
I'm one of the founders for ARF. We are all volunteers. Nobody's paid here. We got started because we started working with Joan Dewey out with Bethel Friends of Canine, and it just kind of blossomed from there. We became a larger organization than I think any of us ever expected.
How many are you of hardcore
volunteers?
Yeah.
Oh, we're probably 30 plus volunteers. We have probably 15 that are super active, always out there every weekend. Our core.
All right, I'm going to come back and learn more about you. Let's talk about to Angie Lewis a little bit from Alaska Animal Advocates. Angie, how long have you been doing this work?
Well, I've been doing it for probably about 15 years, and then started with some cohorts, this organization, Alaska Animal Advocates, and we've been around for almost 2 years now.
Are you a founder? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you have similarly like a hardcore group of 15? Or
I wish that we did. I would say probably five really very involved people, and then another 10 that kind of come and go as their life allows them to.
Right. And this was important to you. Why?
I've always been an animal lover. I'm from New York, and I rescued feral cats there, which is a whole different world.
Oh, that is a different story. Yes.
Yeah. And so when I came up here, I just loved especially huskies, and just really saw a big need for dogs to be placed in homes, loving homes. Mm-hmm. And that's throughout the state of Alaska.
Okay. So it's just a passion. It became a passion.
A very big passion.
And Jill Bingman from Everts Air Cargo, tell us about how you got engaged with this.
Well, I'm actually originally from Dillingham, so I was very familiar with rural life for animals that don't have veterinarian services or limited services. And I started working for Everett's Air Cargo in the marketing capacity, and so I thought I'd just check into veterinarian services and see if maybe they wanted to do a cooperative force and do transportation to get animals out of rural Alaska to get spayed and neutered or vaccinated. And that just kind of blossomed. I met Sally Clampett from ARVO in 2013. She was speaking at a rural business conference, and we started talking, and EAC program kind of bloomed from there with a lot of other great organizations, and we've been able to provide affordable transportation for the rural resident, as well as offer free transportation for animals that are being rescued and adopted in Anchorage.
So people don't necessarily have to be sending in a dog to rural Alaska to engage with you. They might be a resident out in rural Alaska and have a dog that needs veterinary care.
Yes.
And they can work with you, right?
Yes, they can do a $50 round-trip rate. They just call in for a reservation, and Everett's employees are all animal lovers, so the animals come in, and if we have any delays or anything like that, well, we're real good on taking them out walking for potty breaks or...
Yeah, I called you the other day when we were getting ready for the show, and they said, you know, she's not answering. I think she's out walking dogs. So I thought that's one of the perks of your job.
Well, unfortunately, we do struggle with some weather issues and a few delays, and when we do that, we make sure that our four-legged travelers are well cared for. Sometimes they spend time in our offices with us, and it's hard for us to put them back in the kennels if they're going the other direction. But
yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I also wanted to say that there's many other organizations that are working on this problem that aren't necessarily represented on the show. But if we think of them, we'll throw their names out. And I know I have heard from folks that I think Raven Air also participates
they
in
do,
some.
Yes.
I don't know whether it's a coordinated effort, but they're another group that is doing some of that work out there. So let's before the show started, I said, well, let's try to give people a feel for the problem. Are there more dogs in certain parts of rural Alaska? And I think we all discussed here that it's pretty widespread. There's not a particular region that has more. It's not a legacy necessarily of a mushing history, really. I think it was you, Bev, who was saying, why don't you tell us about some of the kind of dogs that you actually bring in from rural Alaska that are not huskies or mushing dogs?
You would be surprised at some of the little tiny things that we get in. We've got dogs from 5 pounds literally to 170 pounds. ARF has a purebred Saint Bernard that was sent in a couple weeks ago from a rural community. So you'd be surprised. It's not just sled dogs. It's a little bit of everything.
Right. And how about you, Angie? Is that pretty same experience?
Yeah, I would say the same. We've got, you know, pit bull mixes, chihuahuas to, you know, Great Dane mixes.
Yeah. So. Now, in our case, I know that the person we work with Alaska Animal Advocates told us that our dog and I think two or three siblings and a mother came in, and we did not get our dog immediately. We just knew that there was a possibility and that this was the cluster of dogs that they had, but that all of them were adopted. And so including they emphasized the mother. So I wonder if does everybody want a puppy, and is it a struggle to find homes for older dogs, or what's your experience? And let's start with Bev.
We actually adopt out a lot of adult dogs. We try to emphasize more on the adults than the puppies. We get in a lot of puppies, but especially this time of year. But, you know, generally we have more adults and we place more adults than we do puppies.
Now, what's the deal with this time of year? Is there a cycle to puppies?
It seems
I just don't know.
It.
All the time.
Christmas, you know?
It seems like every winter we seem to get slammed with puppies.
Oh, in the winter.
Okay. I have no idea why.
And how about you?
Probably the same. I think, you know, what we encourage is people who don't make rash decisions and come in to get cat litter and see these adorable puppies and walk out with a puppy. And then a few months later, they come back and say, oh, I didn't know he was going to pee all over. I didn't know, you know, it would be so hard to train him.
Yeah.
But there are definitely people who are looking for adults, and there are so many advantages to adult dogs. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And Jill, from your perspective, this has been ongoing for, you gave us the year, maybe 2013, that you've been working.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, can you tell us, have you seen all kinds of dogs come through?
Oh, we have.
Yeah. So big,
great
little.
Great variety. Yes.
Noisy, mm-hmm. quiet.
Oh, they can be noisy. And we have them, they're nice and quiet too. Really hard for all of us. Actually, many of our employees have gone through the adoption process and are now proud owners of some of the dogs that we've had the privilege of transporting. So.
Yeah, it's kind of how it spreads, right?
Yeah,
word of mouth. Somebody sees a happy situation and think, gee, I'm missing something in my life. Yeah. I want that too. And here's an avenue to do it. Something that I was surprised, to me, I was saying it's a puppy in a box, you know, because our dog came with a chip, it came with inoculations, it came with something else, spay and neuter. Mm-hmm. So it was already taken care of. And then basically when I took our dog to the vet, because once I got her, I took her to the vet, and they remarked on how social she was, and they thought it was very good that she had stayed with her siblings and her mother for as long as she did when she first got down here. And they remarked on that, because sometimes that isn't the case. Mm-hmm. They're not as social as she was, and she's proven out to be very social. Let's see, I think we should talk about how does someone qualify to do this, because, you know, I know we had a visit to our house. That was something that we made an application, and we had an actual visit. Might have been you, Angie. I don't know. My husband was the one who was home at the time, so I don't know. So tell me, and we'll go to both of your organizations. What's your process? Let's start with you, Angie.
Okay, so what we do is when someone has interest in one of our puppies or dogs, they fill out an adoption questionnaire, and then we review that with them. And if there are things that we're not certain about or we need more explanation, we'll talk to them right then and get further explanation. And then we make an appointment for a home visit. And mm-hmm. We do the home visit, and we have turned down some people, not many, but mm-hmm. we certainly have. And so then if everything gels and it looks like it's going to be a good home for the dog, then they have mm-hmm. the opportunity mm-hmm. to adopt them.
And, I mean, I thought it was really terrific to have all those medical issues mm-hmm. taken care of. I guess it sends them out with the best.
Ready, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Sort of ready. How about you, Bev? How is it for your organization?
You know, very similar to Angie's.
Yeah.
It's starts with the application. Anybody that's going to adopt also has to do an adoption agreement, of course. Uh-huh. We do the home visits. We do the medical, of course. One thing that we try to emphasize is we try not to, with ours, we have very few set in stone rules for adoption. Like fences, we're not going to say every dog requires a fence.
Because some dogs might not. Yeah.
Right. They we try to match. Be. Exactly. We try to match the dog with the home that's the best match for the dog.
Right.
And of course, we deal with a lot more adults. And so that becomes key in that.
Right. Adult dogs.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to make sure the personalities match. Right. You don't want to stick a hyperactive border collie with somebody that's mm-hmm. a couch potato.
Right, or isn't able to get out and walk in the snow.
Exactly.
And all the things that you actually need to do if you've got one of those high-energy dogs.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes people, and you alluded to it a little bit, Angie, about they don't know what they're getting into. And, of course, if they've been a prior dog owner, they have a pretty good sense of it. But I guess I just wonder, do you find that do you get return dogs, or do you get people calling you back for more advice? Like, I didn't know what this was going to, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think people
Absolutely.
Are?
Absolutely. In fact, we've provided training for dogs that had behavior problems that weren't exhibited until they were in that home. And the people were dedicated enough to want to maintain that commitment. And so they wanted to keep the dog, but they couldn't tolerate a certain behavior. And so we've provided training.
That you guys provide the training, or
well,
you connect them,
we
with,
connect
the,
them yeah.
with the right?
Yeah. We would love to have a trainer on board, but that hasn't happened yet.
That's a dream.
It certainly is. We have a lot of those.
Yeah. Well, we went through puppy class a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And it was really good. I have to say, I forget the organization, but I'm pretty sure it's a nonprofit over on Arctic Road. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. First, we did the scatterer puppy class, although they did keep us separated, you know, and there was only a brief little puppy scramble.
A socialization time, yeah.
But it gets out of hand pretty quickly. So that's like a big treat, but it's not the mm-hmm. entire session. And then we moved on to sort of a lot of more training. And mm-hmm. I wish we were continuing, but we haven't. But we reinforce what we've learned so far. There's a lot of, you know, sit, stay, and then come, and all kinds of stuff like that. But, I mean, I can see how easily it would be to get sort of sucked into the training and, I mean, mm-hmm. the bonding with your dog. But the reality is we're working, and we haven't been able to do that. But we got her to a very stable place. Mm-hmm. But I think key, this reminds me of my dad, the way he looked at my brother. It's like, keep him tired all the time. that's the way I feel about my puppy. Keep her tired all the time. Then we know we have a nice evening. You know? So, let's see. I wanted to know, the people who foster, do they come from all walks of life? Because that's a key piece here. These are people who open their home temporarily for a dog. Tell me a little bit, and I don't really need people's names, but I'm just curious, you know, do they come from all walks of life, or is there a certain kind of person that just loves animals, or I don't know. How many foster families do you sort of, what's your caseload that you've got working at any given time? I mean, and I don't know if you can even characterize it like that, but how about you, Angie? What do you think?
Well, certainly, loving dogs
that's key.
Is vital, yeah. And we do home visits with people who are going to foster as well. I'm going to be honest. I ask everybody if they want to foster. I mean, if I'm in a restaurant, the waiter comes by and I'll say, hey, you know, are you interested in fostering? I have this wonderful puppy, or I have this beautiful older dog. And yeah, and then there are certain fosters that are dog trainers. We have one now, and so that's like the pie in the sky, you know, when you can get somebody who knows dogs and knows how to train them.
Speaks dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so then you might give them that more challenging dog, and they can
provide the training. I've got one for you. Uh-huh. Hey, I should throw out our phone numbers for our listeners. If you've just joined us, our topic today is this sort of pipeline of overabundant dogs in rural Alaska being brought into population centers where people actually are looking for dogs. It's a really creative solution to the fact that rural Alaska doesn't have many vets out there that can do some of the vet services that people need. So I'm just going to run through our guests. We have Angie Lewis from Alaska Animal Advocates and Bev Osick from ARF. And we have Jill Bingman from Everts Air Cargo, which is really plays a key role here in the transportation element. So we'll talk some more about that.
Sure.
Just for our listeners, if you have rescued a dog, or you have questions about how to rescue a dog, or what's entailed, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Jill, I want to go back to you, because I was impressed that a business took on this, and I was thinking, well, it really is that kind of community support thing that makes you loyal to a business when they do something like that. I'm sort of curious, was it a hard sell, or because I believe this business began in rural Alaska, so maybe it's, am I right about that? I think it was the Eagle. Or maybe I'm wrong.
The Eagle?
Well,
where Everts actually started.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, Rob Everts purchased Tutundic Outfitters, and that was a service that provided fairbanks to Eagle. And then it evolved into Everts Air Cargo, which is based in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And now we service 13 hubs.
Oh, yeah. If you can roll through them, go ahead.
Yeah. We've got Iliamna, King Salmon, Dillingham, Togiak, Bethnal, Aniak, Emonic, St. Mary's, Unaklit, Nome, Kotzebue, and Galena. And, of course, Fairbanks Anchorage. And so with being a tough sale, no. The Everts family is just total.
I suspected that they were. They've seen rural Alaska. They know some of the.
Yeah.
And they had something they could do.
They are, and they're all animal lovers. Susan Hoshaw, our general manager here, and a member of the family, has a adopted rescue, and they're very, very connected to the communities that they service, and they're their advocate.
That's so great. That's so great. I'm going to welcome a caller on to Hometown Alaska. Hello, Christine.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It's just a statement. I am a foster failure.
Oh, you're getting a lot of sympathy here.
I fostered a dog 2 years ago Christmas, and he came to family from, he was a Bethel dog. I got it through ARF. He did have to lose his leg because of an injury and sort of abuse from his previous owner. And he was a little difficult at first because he was very aggressive for his food and various other things. But since then, he's just turned into just a lovable dog, and I'm just so happy with him. I have another dog that he and my big boy just are inseparable. So it's just what ARF has done for our community is just, it's priceless.
Oh, that's great. You know, Christine, I thought about, you know, what is it like when you introduce a foster dog into a family that has a dog? I mean, are there special things you watch out for, or does it just depend on the nature of the dog? And I'm kind of looking at Angie and Bev. I mean, it sounded like Christine had a dog at home, but also fostered and then ended up, I guess, adopting. I love the way you put that, Christine, a foster failure. You fell in love. Well, let me ask Christine that question. Was it hard for your existing pet to accept a foster and then eventually, I guess, a sibling almost, you know? How was it?
It was difficult for him, but he's a big old boy. He's part Burmese and Lab and Love. And so because of his temperament, it was easy. Because when I brought his name's Marley, Murphy, into the mix, he was very aggressive. But because my big dog was more passive, I think it blended well because of that. And over time, my three-legged dog, Murphy, his temperament just dissipated. His aggression just dissipated. Mm. And the first few weeks, my daughter told me we need to bring him back because he's too aggressive. But now it's not even a thought. And I said, no, with time and love, he'll be a different dog. And it's just amazing, night and day.
Did you try to introduce any training, Christine? Did you seek out puppy class? I don't know if this was a puppy or an older dog that you were fostering, did you just kind of let your older dog lead the way there? It sounds like he was unflappable.
My older dog, yes, led the way because his leg was, he came to me with four legs, but his leg was damaged, and we had to have it amputated just a month after I had him. There wasn't a lot of time in which I could actually take him in for training because he was healing for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And with maybe that was probably part of the reason why his behavior changed within about 4 months is because he was realizing that we were caring for him and not hurting him. And
he maybe started to feel safer, maybe, and he could relax.
I think that's a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, Christine, thanks for, I was hoping we would get stories of people who, I wouldn't call it a failure, I'd call it a huge success. And thank you so much for sharing the story with us on Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
So let's see, I want people to know if they decide they want to foster, what are they in for? You know, do they have to commit to a certain time? Do they have to commit to paying the vet bills? Do they, well, you know, sort of what's the transaction? And I don't know, why don't we start with you, Angie?
Sure. No, all that they are asked to provide is the love and the time. We provide the crates, the bowls, the blankets, food. Any medical needs are taken care of by us. So it's not a financial drain on the family at all.
Oh, I see.
So, Yeah.
That's important. I mean,
it is.
Somebody might be willing, but thinking, oh, I couldn't, I really can't take on those bills right now.
Financial times are tough, and we would never expect that family.
Yeah. I'm going to welcome another caller on the show. Kay, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I had a little poodle mix dog, a 13-year-old diabetic dog. We're out walking on leash in our downtown neighborhood. And my neighbor let his German Shepherd out without leash, as he does every day. He's an assemblyman. And my dog was killed. So I'd like you to emphasize to your people who are taking in dogs, and I'm certainly a dog lover, that if you bring a dog in from the villages where it's been running free, that Anchorage has a very strict leash law, and all dogs have to be on leash unless they're in the dog park, and that voice control is not legal in Anchorage, unless you're in the dog agility training or you're playing dog frisbee.
I think so that's good information, Kay. Thank you for sharing it. I'm sorry for the loss of your dog. I remember reading about it in the newspaper and cringing, and it was difficult to read that. So it is important to emphasize that, and I think we want dogs to be healthy and happy, and that includes surviving. Mm-hmm. So
We want all the dogs to be safe on their walk.
That's right. That's a great point. So thank you, Kay.
I very much
appreciate it. I'd like to welcome Doug on the show. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, hi. Enjoying your program there. I want to commend your guests and the folks that participate in this program. It's definitely needed for finding homes for those dogs. I have a foster dog that I picked up when I was mnemonic a few years back, and it's worked out great with her. It's actually the first time I've ever had a dog, and she's 4 years old, or she was 4 years old when I got her. And she had a bit of baggage in when she was in mnemonic, where she had puppies, and she'd had like three broods of puppies. But for this particular batch, when our paths crossed, she had two remaining out of 12, and some had been killed by pack dogs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when our paths crossed, she was actually being attacked at that time. Her puppies were cowering under the building that we were staying in.
That's
and
troublesome.
Yeah. Pack dogs were trying to get at them, and they were ripping her up. Mm. But a friend took the puppies, and I ended up taking the mom, and she's worked out just fantastic.
Wow.
You know, she did have a little bit of anxiety around other dogs that we worked through a little bit, and she does really well on it right now. It's been a great experience, and I really haven't had any problems with her at all with what some of the other callers had mentioned. And one thing I do want to, my question, I guess, more is, it seems to me it's needed desperately to get vets to go out to the villages to provide the opportunity for neutering and whatnot with the dogs. And what is available for villages in that regard?
That's a great question. And
I'll take the answer offline.
Sure. And Jill is part of that. Her Everts Animal Care is part of that. And we're going to, on the second half of the show, welcome Sally Clampett from the Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach program and she has some information about that. And I know their ambitions are big, and sometimes they don't get to do everything they want, but their eye is on the prize. I can tell from just talking to Sally, you know, you can hear it in her voice. So we will talk a little bit more about that. And I would say, I mentioned Sally represents the Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach, and that is another one of the websites that we've listed on alaskapublic.org. So if people want to read about what that group does or any of these groups, just go to alaskapublic.org, and you can start to watch their Facebook pages and see pictures of dogs. And I forget which one of you, whether it was ARF or Alaska Animal Advocates, but I saw, you know, 31 dogs that were available in pictures. It was Bev's site, and I actually had to copy the Carillion Bear dog. I snagged it onto my desktop and sent it to my husband, because the other dog in our neighborhood that is the playmate for my dog looks very much like a Carillion Bear, with a very tight curled tail and the certain kind of face and the tiny feet. It's just really fun. So anyway, you can peruse and you can see and sort of educate yourself on what's going on here. So, but we do have to take take a little break. I'm just going to remind folks who's on the show with us. We'll be back in just a minute, but we have Angie Lewis from Alaska Animal Advocates, Bev Osick from Alaskan, from ARF, let's just go to ARF, Jill Bingman from Everts Air Cargo. And when we come back after our break, we're going to welcome Sally Clampett in from Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach, who's going to just kind of give us an overview of what that organization does. So we'll be right back. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, and we are here discussing the basically well-intentioned pipeline of bringing extra dogs from rural Alaska to the population centers. We're talking about Anchorage because we're in Anchorage. I imagine it's happening in Fairbanks and Juneau, but I maybe our guests can fill us in a little bit. we have and Sally soon to join us, but she's on the line, but We'll bring her in here in just a moment. I further want to go back to Jill a little bit, just because I feel like we're so lucky to have you, that transportation leg and that kind of volunteerism that isn't not fostering, although I gather you're all fostering as well, but it's that critical pipeline. And I guess I'm just trying to think, what more can we tell? We do want to talk about Straw for Dogs, which Definitely. Is not your organization, but it's one No. you're aware of and you do Mm-hmm. facilitate. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, Straws for Dogs is an amazing program. They provide dog houses and straw bedding for animals in rural Alaska that are outdoor living. And Everts has had the privilege of working with them and providing either reduced rates or non-revenue shipments to various locations, all of our hubs, to help them provide those services for families that maybe can't provide that themselves. And they're just awesome. They have a website, and they're great.
It's called Straw for Dogs. I'll try to add that to our alaskapublic.org website. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to welcome Brian on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Brian.
Hey, good afternoon.
What's on your mind?
there's just some talk about different options for people in rural Alaska and to get dogs spayed and neutered. And I actually just moved into town, but I worked in environmental health at the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation out in Bethel for quite a while. And we had a program where we partnered with Sally's group and then another outfit out of Fairbanks and did free spays and neuters, and we did usually about 5 or 6 villages at least every summer. The Christian Veterinary Mission was one of our other partners, and
I saw them.
A lot of different villages. But I just started a job here at Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and I'm actually in the very, very early stages of developing a program. It's a partnership between Community Environment and Health here at ANTHC and then the University of Fairbanks Veterinary Program.
Wow.
Nice.
Is this news to you guys?
We're just kind of in planning stages now, but the goal is for that program we're going to use vet externs and UAF veterinary staff. They have a vet med program to do free spays and neuters. But the ultimate goal is to do research about non-invasive methods of sterilization. So there's different shots and things like that that achieve the same ends as sterilizing a male or female dog. So we're going to try to look into that. And, you know, I have been in this kind of line of work here for almost a decade now, and I see this animal control issue in rural Alaska as a, you know, it's an access to care issue.
Yeah,
we kind of figured that out as a public health kind of group that, you know, we'd like to eventually way down the line have a program similar to like the health aid program.
Oh my gosh, that's such a creative idea.
It is.
I love that.
That's awesome.
That is the goal. Yeah. We found in all our travels that, you know, it's carting veterinarians around who, you know, you're usually borrowing their time, and
it's hard for them to give up time. I know,
right.
I learned that by doing some of the research, that they often have their own clinics and it's time away,
sure,
from their own clinics. It's hard for them to get it. I think, mm-hmm, yeah, that's great. I just want to thank you for calling in and delivering, you know, another angle on this. It's really going to be exciting to watch that develop, and the fact that there's research involved that might lead to some other, like, less invasive ways of managing, you know, puppiness. So that's really great. And how long did you say you'd been doing it, Brian?
Oh, I worked at YK for about 8 years.
Wow.
And we started the program. Our office over there tracked all the dog bites for the whole YK Delta, and it's a pretty big public health issue out there.
Right. Right.
Then we kind of started this program thinking, you know, the core of the problem is there's way too many puppies and no access to, you know.
Right, right. So you start to think about different ways to, are there areas you're going to focus on, Brian, or is it just, are you just going to sort of try to get into the flow that's already existing? I mean,
yeah, we're going to kind of, at least to start, I think we're going to continue working in the YK Delta. I mean, it is a very big need there. And then I just, you know, from living out there for so long, I have good contacts all around there. So we're trying to kind of build the program. We're going to try to make this summer a kind of best practices manual for animal control, tailor-fitted to rural Alaska. So it's a, you know, the public health professionals in our state are kind of starting to realize that this is, you know, not only an animal health issue, but it's also, mm-hmm, a human physical and mental health issue, and it does need some attention.
Well, that's very encouraging, and I just really appreciate, you know, hearing. I knew there were other groups out there, but I think even looking at the faces of our guests, that some of this is new information for,
sure,
for them too, and very, very, very excited about it. And I could see some smiles and like, yes, yes, here comes the cavalry.
Slowly getting started, but yeah, I think this is really good that you have this on air. I think one of the first, you know,
yeah,
kind of things we need to do is establish a network of people who are working towards these goals, because
yeah, and it's important to know that people are that, and there's room to help if people are interested. So Brian, thank you so much. You were filled,
yep,
with information. That was fantastic.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And folks, we do have Sally Clampett on. I was promising her, and here she is. Sally, please join us on Hometown Alaska. How are you?
Well, thank you. Hello, everybody, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. I know all three of your guests and the wonderful work they do.
Sally, did you happen to hear that Brian, that was just a caller that was on the line? Could you hear him?
I did, and I know Brian, and I am completely familiar with the program that he referred to at UAF. I was contacted by them as early as last year.
Oh, that's great.
With regards to their developing veterinary program.
Well, that's great. He caught me by surprise, and I was really glad. I knew there were groups out there working on this. We're not representing everybody on the show, but it just is really nice for them to call in and share their story too. But now that we have you, please tell us about Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach and what your mission is. And I know you work a lot with Jill Bingman. You guys coordinate a lot, but kind of give us a feel for what the mission is.
Well, the mission is exactly this: to provide veterinary care to communities like Ammonic, like your caller Doug just referenced, to provide spay-neuter, deworming, vaccines, rabies if they don't have a lay vaccinator in their community. And we do other small things, clip nails, if somebody has a skin infection or itchy ears, those kinds of things, and general wellness exams for people.
Mm-hmm.
We are currently talking to Ammonic, Doug.
No.
So hopefully we'll have a chance to meet you if we can put this together for this coming season.
You know, I think, Sally, it was you who told me how tough it is to, you know, find vets who are working full-time in clinics in populated areas to get that time to go to rural Alaska. And you painted a picture for me of pretty tough sledding where people leave, you know, may leave Anchorage or maybe it's Fairbanks, you know, Friday night and fly into a rural community and work all 2 days, the weekend, and probably, you know, maybe sleeping on the community center floor, or maybe sometimes it's the health clinic floor, whatever, but really making that contribution and seeing dogs. So I kind of want you to tell us a little bit about that. How, when you go out, how big a team do you take? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you. First of all, we are very grateful to the Alaska Veterinary Medical Association. We have their support, and the veterinarians who go on our clinics are members of that association. The number of vets and techs that go to a clinic can depend on our caseload. The largest number we've had was 3 vets and 3 techs at one particular clinic where they knocked out 86 surgeries.
Wow. And, in 2 days? Wow.
86 surgeries of spays and neuters.
Wow.
Probably sometimes a little more on the spays, maybe 55, 45, I could look it up, but, and then a whole bunch of other wellness exams and folks who just wanted or needed only to have vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So since we were incorporated at the end of, since our first clinic at the end of 2012, we have done a total of 276. Nope, that's not right. That's the wrong page. I want to tell you. Oh, it's way more than that. We've done a total of 270 spays, 168 neuters, and then about 300 other non-surgical animals that we've helped. So it's about 670 some.
I'm just thinking
together.
About how many, if those spays and neuters hadn't happened, of those hundreds of dogs.
Exactly.
How exponentially.
Exactly. And all of that is in, you know, like 10 villages.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that people hopefully will learn and understand is that there are over 200 rural off-the-road system villages in rural Alaska that have no access to regular veterinary care. There are some wonderful vets that routinely go. It could be quarterly or 3 times a year to a few remote places. And there is a vet who does a wonderful job going up to Bethel once a week every month.
Wow.
But it doesn't
once a week.
Touch.
Wow.
It's still the tip of the iceberg. If you have a moment, I'll tell you. We brought in a mother dog, a pregnant mother dog, 2 actually, from a village that we went to last year. One of them had 14 puppies.
Wow.
2 days after she got here, and the other one had 8 puppies. Those were just 2 dogs, each with just the 1 litter. From one village.
Wow.
And so when you think about, and they have, on one of them it had many litters, and the other one it had 2 other litters.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
So the resources available, it's just very challenging for pet owners out there.
I know, Sally, when we were talking before the show, there's one thing about bringing existing puppies or older dogs into the population areas so they can be adopted, but there's the other thing, which is addressing the big problem, and that's the tough part because there aren't vets out in those rural areas. It's pretty interesting to hear this vet extern, I guess he called them, like an internship, but where they might. And even Brian was describing something where it might be almost like health aides, like a vet aide that's trained and living in a village. Boy, that just sounds like a wonderful solution. By the way, I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you work with Everts Air Cargo, because I know, talking to you before the show, that you have a lot of things you have to bring out to when you're going to do this, and you've coordinated with Everts Air Cargo and maybe some other airlines, I don't know, but how do you work with them?
Well, the day that Jill and I met at a conference, I thought an angel had walked into my life. And
you were speaking all the words
true.
She wanted to hear.
When we go out to the villages, We do. We carry a lot of stuff, and some of it is heavy. We take. We don't have an autoclave, which is what your regular veterinarians use to sterilize instruments. We take a pressure cooker, and we sterilize them.
And those
that.
Are not light.
It's great. It's mm-hmm. great. And we carry all kinds of drugs and supplies and equipment, and they're in the typical totes, these 18-gallon totes, and it's very costly to ship them out. The other problem is, on some of the smaller airlines, freight sometimes gets bumped. And if there are too many passengers, if there are a lot of passengers, and we can't have that. We cannot have totes not arrive for a clinic.
With the medicine and everything that you need.
Jill's service is just rock solid, reliable, and she so graciously helps us to get that stuff out to these animals and their people at low to no cost.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful.
Well,
because that money that we would spend on freight can then go into the supplies to provide help to more dogs.
That's great. I think I've listed your website on alaskapublic.org, and people can read your history and read just the various ways to connect or learn about the effort that you're making. And I just want to thank you, Sally, so much for calling in and sharing. It's just it's the big picture you're focused on, and not just finding new homes, but maybe making sure that the dogs that are born are the dogs that are wanted, and not excess dogs that people weren't really planning on having and don't know how to take care of. So
right.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You bet. I'm going to throw out our numbers for our listeners. We've been hearing basically from people who have experience, and I'm just wondering if there's people out there who want to know if their situation could qualify, or what's the maximum time that I might be could it be that I'm fostering a dog for 2 years, or does it mean 2 months, or what does it mean? So think about that. And if you've got questions, we've got some great experts here in the studio to help you with that. Locally, it's 550-8433, or statewide, you can call us at 1-888-353-5752, or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right. Now, if we get calls, we'll go to those. But what haven't we covered that we want to make? We still have, 12 minutes or so. We have time. But what do you think is really important?
I'm thinking of a
Angie.
Few things. Angie, sorry. One being that when you do adopt a dog, to just be patient. You can't expect, because like you said, they're in a box. They're spayed. They're neutered. But their background and their history is not in a box. And some of them have had some horrendous experiences.
Mm-hmm.
No socialization, no medical mm-hmm. care, no love, no mm-hmm. attention. So just to be patient, sometimes people think in a day or two this dog is just going to sprout and be delightful.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case.
Right.
And, however, given some time, they certainly will rise to the occasion if you have that patience and training. And
Right. How about you, Bev? What's your thought about that?
I completely agree.
Who would disagree with that? Be patient. I say to people, be patient with me, please.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
We generally tell our adopters to expect about 4 weeks for a dog's personality to really come through.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah, because you have to give the dog time to first come into your home. You're taking a dog from everything it's ever known, shoving it into a totally different environment. It has to adjust. Once it goes mm-hmm. into that environment and it's fully adjusted, then you can see its personality.
Right.
But it can take a couple weeks.
Right.
You're
that's
not
a good...
bringing home a... They're not ready-made.
They're not fully formed. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We've got a caller. I'm going to welcome Bob on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Great show. Glad you're publicizing the cause. I just wanted to share a brief story about a rescue dog that we adopted 11 or 12 years ago.
Mm.
She started out in Kotzebue, and she wasn't fast enough to be on the A-team, and that's a grim prognosis for dogs up there, in this case anyway. But Friends of Pets brought her from Kotzebue, or from that Nana region, into town and made her available and emphasized that she was a working dog and would need lots of exercise.
Hmm.
And we had young kids at that time, so we adopted Sheba, and she would be in the house and socialize during the day, but we'd make her sleep out at night in an insulated dog house so that she'd get a good winter coat. And Sheba became our lead ski-joining dog.
Oh, that's great.
Kids were terrorized by her because she would obey me but not them.
She knew who the alpha was, right?
So they got dragged a little bit faster.
Do you still have Sheba today?
No, sadly we don't. But Martin Boozer was an old skier before he was an usher, and he was kind enough to provide a second dog for the team, a husky. And I was able to work with the team to make it ski-touring from Big Lake to McGrath.
Wow.
And that was during the years when the races were human-powered only.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the sponsor and said, well, I can't get that far on my own, but with a team I could. And he said, well, just slip me the money, but don't talk about it.
You bribed your way in.
Right. Yeah. But the dogs made it, and shortly after that, unfortunately, they got out of the yard, and both were hit by a car.
Oh, that's terribly sad. Oh, that's terribly sad.
But yeah. Sheba was told by Pet Emergency that she was a goner. But long story short, she made it with impairment of her gait and her neck. In fact, she had her atlas broken in four places, which is why Dr. Sheba said, there's no way, sorry.
Oh.
But Sheba had the willpower. She had the strength of training and the good luck and the good fortune that for years after that, we would take her up in the mountains. And she just loved being outdoors.
Wow.
And she passed of old age, not of any kind of other problem.
Well, I love hearing that story and the longevity of it, too, the connection she had with your family for so long. And I hadn't thought about sled dogs being perfect for ski-joring, something that's pretty common in an urban area. You know, it doesn't take the sled, it just takes the skis. That's a really interesting thought, too. I had not thought about it. So, thank you, Bob, so much. Go ahead.
Briefly, Martin said, Bob, don't count on this to be a lead dog because she's part of the team and she doesn't know how to lead. But the rescue dog taught her how to lead by virtue of being tied together at the neck when yeehaw came very quickly to Martin's dog.
Oh, that's great.
So we dubbed her Sheba the Wonder Dog.
That's a great story. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you
introduced that idea to us. So thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
I'm going to welcome Holly onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Holly.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to call and throw out a word about fostering. I'm a foster mom for ARF. Hi, Deb. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
and I specialize in the outdoor and sled dogs, and they're just fabulous dogs, and they make the greatest pets. But, you know, we never have enough foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
And just giving them the ability to be introduced to a house and, you know, to get a little direction right off the bat, it increases their chances of adoption tenfold.
Mm.
So I just hope that more people will step up. And, you know, when you say goodbye, it's wonderful because you know they're going to a great home and you help them on the way there.
Oh, so you're familiar with the heart tug there when you have to say goodbye. How did you start, Holly? How did this become part of your life?
Years ago in Fairbanks, I started helping dogs, especially outdoor dogs that needed help, and they didn't have anywhere to go. And a lot of times, it's a pretty horrible end for these dogs. And after, you know, 15 years of living in Alaska, I realized about a decade ago that I couldn't turn my head anymore. And so I do everything I can. I'll foster anywhere from 3 to 5 dogs. I have a rural cabin, and we're super active. But when they go on to find these homes and they come from Bethel and Kotzebue and all over the state, Beluga, even locally here in the valley, they're just amazing dogs once they get a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they need in some direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it sounds like you're accustomed to the idea of bringing dogs into a group. You know, I mean, you don't get five
Definitely.
At once. You might get a couple and then you get another. So do you just let them sort that out? Or
no, they definitely need direction. And I have to give a shout out to the best dog ever. Her name is Maya. She came from the shelter when she was 6 here in the valley. And she is the boss. You know, she's very mellow. She's wonderful. She's 11 now. I've had her for about 5 years. And she often takes the direction, and I kind of help her out. I'm the one who gets the food. And
She sets the hierarchy. I've often heard that dogs need to know where they are in the hierarchy. Then they can relax. But if they don't know,
they have to.
Uh-huh. And so she helps with that. Yeah. That's so interesting. I want to learn to think dog and talk dog. So,
I know.
Yeah.
Honestly cannot say how wonderful fostering is, and I really hope that more people will step up to do it.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Holly. I really appreciate it. And thanks for your story, too.
Thank you so much for the show. It's fabulous. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. So because there's such a need for fostering, and we have been touching on this, and I'll throw the numbers out one more time, 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. I sort of want to, answer those questions. Like, the beginning is probably the hardest, the first step, I want to do this, but... You know, and I guess I'm imagining, Bev and Angie, you answer these kinds of questions. People call up or, you stop the waiter and say, don't you want to foster? And they're like, their mind is trying to get around that, and what is that going to mean? So is there a couple things you sort of say to people when they're just trying to wrap their heads around it? Let's start with you, Bev.
One thing to really hit on is that the first dog is always the hardest. It is hard to let go of the first one. But
oh, I see. I always think it was hard to bring them in, but no, it's hard to let them go.
No, you know what? It's hard to let them go. You form a bond. Even if you try to put up a wall, this dog is going somewhere else, you'll still get attached. Mm-hmm. But, you let that one go and you bring in another one, and it mm-hmm. just helps everything. Mm-hmm. It helps the dog.
Can you visit a dog you fostered, or do you have to say goodbye? Or, is it confusing for the dog if you...
That would really depend on
the dog.
Well, the dog and the people that adopt the dog. Not everybody wants that piece of that dog's history in their lives still. So, some people are really open to maintaining a relationship with the foster parents. I've got so many people's phone numbers on my phone. I get random texts from people that have adopted from me 4 years ago.
Oh,
so,
still in touch. Yeah.
Most people like that connection.
I want to go to one more caller, and that's probably the last one we're going to be able to do. Lori from Wasilla, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi, and great program, and I want to say hello to Bev.
Hi, Lori.
I wanted to call in because I have one of Bev's wonderful dogs that just went through surgery, and I wanted to give a shout out that ARF does such wonderful work getting dogs that need medical care, additional medical care beyond just spay, neuters, and vaccinations. And she does such a wonderful job taking care of these dogs that need extra care, extra expense, and that it gets very expensive for these rescue groups. And maybe you could talk about people donating to help along some of these surgery patients that she has.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think building people's awareness so they even know these efforts are being made is a really important thing. And I have a feeling once you start to learn, you kind of get sucked in. Lori, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for fostering and being part of the solution, I guess. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. So to run through our guests, just so people, if you've been listening to the program, you can go on alaskapublic.org and find websites and read about these groups and find out how you might possibly get involved or just know about it. It enriches your understanding of your own community that people are doing this kind of work. So we've had Angie Lewis from Alaska Animal Advocates. We've had Bev Osick from ARF, or, okay, I'll say it, Alaska Animal Rescue Friends. Jill Bingman from Everts Air Cargo. And also Sally Clampett from Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach. So I want to thank you all so much for taking the time and really sharing the information. And it's a good thing happening in our community. So thank you so much. And I also have to say this is our last show for 2015. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to our guests and listeners over the years. I'll be back as your host when Hometown Alaska returns in January. And Charles Walforth will still be returning as a host to Hometown Alaska. We're working on our show topics now. So so stay tuned. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.